You're listening to the Cannabis Investing Network. Before we begin, a short disclaimer. The full disclaimer follows at the end of this episode. This podcast is a general communication and is being provided for entertainment and information purposes only. It is educational in nature and is not designed to be a recommendation for any specific investment strategy, plan, feature, or other purpose. Please enjoy responsibly. Hello and welcome back to the Cannabis Investing Network podcast. My name is Manish, and we have a jam-packed episode for everybody today. Joining us is a man who needs no blue check mark. His name is Abby.
It's because I got the yellow check mark.
Certified institution, government funded,
body source. Yeah, up to 69%.
There you go. There you go. Little CBC shout out for those who follow.
Yeah. For those who don't know, that was a little poke on those guys.
Abby, how are you, sir?
Oh, it's been good, man. It's been good. I've been quite a little bit busy. I haven't been on here as much as I'd like to be, but it's good to kind of hear your voice again, and trying to stay dry in this unusually wet spring we're having in Toronto. How about you? How have you been? Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm good, man. I mean, coming off being a married man now.
Wow. So, wow. I didn't actually think she said yes. So
yeah, that's right.
she knows you're married, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's one person only, but we did it over Zoom, which is a little weird, but that's okay. It was mostly an AI who answered, so I thought that was odd, but that's fine. No, it was a lovely wedding ceremony. We were out of town, very small, and it was actually on 420 weekend, which is very fitting for us. But yeah, the joke that I kept making was that with this cannabis market, I need the second income to stay afloat. So
has she realized that that's not a joke yet, or is that
that's right,
an awkward conversation?
I was also saying it's going to be funny for her when you kind of at some point show what your assets are. And it's like, this guy's been in real estate for 10 years, made a pretty good income, must have a pretty good savings, right? Been an investor. And yeah, she's unfortunately like, not.
Well, she's like, what do the brackets mean around the numbers?
Yeah, those brackets are huge. Those are great, huh?
Anyways, we're off to a good start, buddy.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So look, I mean, topic of the day, a little bit of excitement in cannabis land. Is this time different? Are we seeing a reason to get a little bit pumped up? We're seeing a coordinated effort seemingly with regards to safe banking, and the Twitter sphere is on fire with what seems to be this coordinated effort from senators and politicians to push safe banking. And as a friend of mine said, I'm ready to get hurt again. So let's talk about it. I mean, agenda for today is we're going to talk about what's going on exactly with safe banking, what we think it actually means. We're going to talk about, are cannabis stocks a good risk reward finally? Why or why not? We're going to delve into some of the macro, talk about where we are in terms of broader markets, the recession, the Fed, the bond rates. Talk about my wheelhouse of commercial real estate and the debt, quote unquote, bubble, which is getting a lot of headlines, and going to make some comparisons between what we're seeing in commercial real estate to what we're seeing in cannabis in evaluating if something is a good buying opportunity. And to close it off, we're going to talk a little bit about what we're seeing out on social media. So to kick it off, Abby, let's chat. I mean, where are we at? I know you were saying you've heard some rumblings even on your end of people who have not really paid any attention to cannabis suddenly in the last week or two coming back and showing some interest in our space.
Yeah. So when SAFE had passed, or when the SAFE news had come out, and I think it was like the eighth time, I was on a call, and there's a bunch of investors on this call from all walks of life. And the person presenting was just kind of going over everything and mentioned Senator Schumer. And then, blah, 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 I went to a Q&A. And one of the first questions that was asked was, oh, hey, blah, 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 you were talking about cannabis. I don't understand what Senator Schumer has anything to do with this. And I found that I was on mute, but I laughed just as hard. So,
It sounds like somebody's ready to be hurt for the first time.
Well, exactly. So, you know, a lot of people look at that. They're like, oh, well, what's the significance of that? And for me, it's like, hey, look, we've got new money at the table, right? Like these guys don't know how long we've been sitting at this poker table, using Alan Brockstein's analogy. And,
that's,
you know,
right.
They just stumbled in after a couple rum and cokes. And
some of us have been here for way too long on a 36-hour bender.
Exactly.
And should just go home and go to bed. So look, I think that's a good little anecdote, because it just shows that, you know, there are a lot of people who haven't looked at the space or don't pay attention to the space, right? Might have heard of it peripherally, but this represents an opportunity, right, for new people to get involved. And it's not to say they will get involved on this spin of the wheel, right? But it's just a reminder that at the end of the day, we are living in a very small echo chamber. And the ultimate goal here is for something to happen that gets new eyeballs on the space, right?
Well, exactly. And what I take away from that is, because it's you know, we've been on this saying so many times that it is top-down driven, that obviously everyone knows that there has to be some sort of macro movement, but it just goes to show you what the power of that macro movement or that top-down decision could be, right? This is a brand new person. This is a, you know, qualified institutional investor who is like looking at the space, or I don't even know if he was looking at the space, he was just on the calls, which means, you know, there had to be some interest. But it could have just been because of safe passing, right?
Yeah. And I mean, again, safe, not passing, but being introduced.
Yeah. Sorry.
Right? And the coordinated effort. And I think it's important to say that, you know, because we've been through so many spins of the wheel of, you know, that analogy I've had before about Lucy and the football and us falling for it, you know, now we've become jaded and we understand that just because a bill is being introduced, there's a very long road to it being passed, you know, if at all, right? If it ever does get passed. But other, you know, newer investors might not see that. They might say, hey, there's something really happening here. Why is nobody paying attention to this?
Exactly. And if you talk to a lot of like existing cannabis investors, especially people that you and I both know, they use that same analogy being like, well, you know, this time she's going to move the football again. And I was talking to somebody and he's like, look, every single person that I know who's a veteran cannabis investor who has invested in space is sort of discounting this, right? They're not to the point where they're ignoring it, but they're like, look, I'm going to keep a close eye on it, but I'm not putting my money in. Maybe I'll dip my toe in. That kind of leads me to believe that this time could be the time that it actually passes, right?
It really could be different.
It could be different. It could be different. And I only say that because none of the usual suspects have kind of come in and put their money down.
Well, look, I think rather than, you know, being certain on the predictive outcome of is it going to happen, is it not going to happen, because we've all seen that really nobody has that predictive power. I think what's better to think about is risk reward, right? What's been priced into this? And I think what you're touching on is the fact that even though it, you know, there's a non-zero chance of this passing, up to now it's been priced in like it is zero, right? You can see how numb people are, how jaded they are. And a little kind of analogy I have is that, you know, being a Toronto sports fan and a hockey fan my whole life, I did not even pay attention to the Maple Leafs being in the playoffs until they were up 3-1. Right. And even then my whole, you know, ethos was, I'm not going to let myself get sucked in again. I'm not going to allow myself to hope. Right. And then, you know, sure enough, you start watching, they lose game 5. Then they came back, they won game 6. But you know, there was a moment there in game 6 where it looked like they were going to lose. And I'm just like holding my head being like, how did I get sucked into this again? You know, how did I allow myself to get here again, right? But sure enough, they won, right? Which was, I think, after like 19 years, they made it out of the first round.
Yeah.
That's how it feels right now with cannabis. You know, it hasn't been 19 years, but people certainly are grizzled as if it's been, you know, longer than it has. And it feels very rough. And it's just easier for people to say, hey, I'm not going to let myself get sucked in by this. Right. I'll believe it when I see it. I'm not going to allow myself to get drawn in. And certainly in December, we learn that lesson pretty vividly, right? It's the market can really seem like things are going to happen. And it from everyone I've spoken to, it actually really seemed like everyone on the Hill thought it was going to happen in December until Mitch McConnell kind of came out of nowhere and nixed it. So the market was, you know, reacting to something in December, but it doesn't mean it's always right. Now we're seeing a little bit of movement, right? We're seeing MSOS being up maybe 10% off of the lows from 2 weeks ago. And we're seeing some good volume over the last 2 weeks, which is encouraging, right? But I think that we're a long ways away from knowing if any of the federal movement is actually going to happen. To Abby, to your point, it's somewhat encouraging that a lot of the usual suspects are not getting too excited about this.
Yeah, and then another thing that I want to say, well, first of all, I know you mentioned the 19 years. It kind of feels like 19 years in cannabis years, okay?
Right.
So we've gone through the pain. But another thing that I wanted to kind of point out was that when I did talk to a couple of people who are not typically cannabis investors, and they were asking what I like, and I was kind of talking about cannabis, and they knew a little bit about SAFE, but they pulled up the charts, right, like MSOS or any chart, and they just see something going from top left to bottom right, mm-hmm. and they just instantly discounted it, right? They're like, whatever, like I'm not that interested. So
something must be wrong here.
Exactly.
When you look at that chart, you're like, the market knows something here.
Exactly. And they're like, I'm just kind of like, I'm gonna wait, or let's just see, you know, that type of approach sort of happened too. So,
and that usually is where a lot of money is made, right? When things are really bad and they look dire, people are willing to get out at a very, very low price. It turns the corner, you can make just going from horrible to not horrible, you can make a good amount of money, right? Because people price that in, right? And yeah. So that's, we're going to talk about this later with office buildings. That's where a lot of money is made, when there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty, but people can, you know, kind of step up and take a risk, right? In our industry, a lot of people who might take that risk are already so overloaded with these bags that they're like, look, what's the point of me putting new money in when I'm down 80, 85, 90%?
Yeah, this thing's got a 4X for me to break even.
Totally, you know? Right? So let's talk about that actual, you know, SAFE banking push. I think one thing that was pretty interesting was seeing, you know, Chuck Schumer send out a tweet where he, in a nutshell, he basically made it sound like SAFE banking is equity, right? He basically said, we need to pass SAFE banking because it will help minority business owners. It will help state legal businesses. And then he went back and deleted that tweet, which I thought was really interesting. And it was sort of replaced with a tweet just saying we need to pass SAFE banking and also address the wrongs of the past and have equity and et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, the question I was thinking over is like, what's going on here, right? Like why take all of this time to do that, right? And what I get out of it is that the politicians don't really know what they're advocating for when it comes to cannabis, right? What I mean by that is that cannabis is a very complex issue. It used to be that cannabis was a simple issue. Hey, legalize cannabis. It shouldn't be a Schedule I drug. We shouldn't lock people up for it. That was pretty simple. Then it became more complex as time went on to say, okay, we want to legalize, but how should we legalize? What's the best way to legalize? What's the social equity component that we're doing, right? Back in 2018 and 19, that was not really a big part of the conversation. Now it is a necessary part of the conversation, right? So it's shifted from just legalize it to how should we legalize it? And when it comes to this, you know, SAFE banking discussion, the politicians, they need to put together a coalition to pass something, but then also they need to think about what the voters are going to care about. Well, anything with banking in the name is not very attractive to people who want equity. Right? They want something that's like, you know, the help right the wrongs of the past cannabis bill, not the banking bill. Right? So even though that we understand the nuance of why the banking is important for the social equity businesses, they need to be really careful about how they're positioning that. And they know they're supposed to do something. They know it has to have a component of being equity focused and helping minorities, but the rest is kind of up in the air and they're not really sure how to put it together. And that's what gives me the most concern about, are they actually going to get something passed here? That and the fact that, look, I mean, they were derailed by this banking crisis, which mostly seems to be resolved for now. But coming up pretty soon, you're going to have the debt ceiling crisis. So there never seems to be a really good time for them to focus on cannabis. There always seems to be something else to address. You know, last year it was Ukraine, you know, then it was SVB and banking. And, you know, now very shortly it's going to be debt ceiling, right? So it's a hard time for anyone, I think, to really push cannabis banking as a priority.
The only caveat that I'll say to that, and, you know, I've heard a few people say this actually, is that not to use the cliche this time, it's different, but keep in mind, we are in the third year of a presidential election. The Democrats are up for re-election. So yes, it might not be an opportune time. There could be a lot going on, but they do know that there's a lot of voters there. And you know, they've fooled us once already when they came in. And I think once they start talking about this issue, once they start generating some buzz around it, we'll start seeing some more capital markets activity happen, some stocks start getting re-rated. And I think that could be enough of a reason to start bringing this up again, right? That's not to say anything's going to happen with it, but sure. It's just to say that there's going to be more chatter with it, right? So you're right. There's all these other issues that are going, but those issues don't necessarily garner as many votes as something like cannabis could, I'm assuming.
Yeah, listen, it's a good point. And just to further that, you know, Trump had an interview that came out, I think it was this week. Today's Monday, May 1st. And something to the, you know, they asked him about cannabis. And it was funny because the reporter, I think it was like Newsmax, which is, you know, a pretty right-wing news outlet. He teed it up as like, it seems like half the country's smoking pot. And isn't this horrible for America? Like, comment on it. And, you know, Trump was pretty even keeled on it. He kept it pretty short, but he basically said, you've seen the same studies I've seen. It's not a great thing, but it's very popular. It gets a lot of votes. And he kind of left it at that. And, you know, that reporter was very anti-cannabis, so he wanted him to smack it down. Previously before this, Trump had said that the really high THC levels in cannabis were causing people to, you know, have mental issues and lead to more shootings, which, by the way, although I'm disagreeing with what he's saying, I have pointed out that is something that I think is a legitimate issue. The fact that from a perception standpoint, THC just keeps going up and up and up, and people perceive that to be an issue, right? That can cause mental issues, especially in people who already have underlying conditions like schizophrenia. It's just one of those things that even people who don't smoke cannabis, but, you know, are kind of lukewarm on the idea of legalizing it, that's something they can, you know, get behind in terms of what they're opposed to. It's like, hey, you're having young people having access to ever increasing potency, right? That's something that I've seen or could start to get more play, and we'll kind of see how it shakes out.
But wouldn't that be able to be counteracted quite easily? Like, That's not a cannabis issue. That's like a black market issue, right? Because THC levels, it's like a black market legal issues, because THC levels in the black market, A, you don't know. They could be just as high and they could still be getting access to it, right? Like, the whole issue, I thought, with cannabis was the fact that just because there's not an adult program or just because there's not a legalization program doesn't mean the general population isn't already consuming cannabis.
Yeah, look, good point. It's better for it to be safe and tested, right, and have a lab result attached to it. I agree.
Yeah, they can put a THC limit on it if they wanted to, but you can't do that if it's the black market. But anyways, yeah, that's just,
listen. Yeah. Those are good points. I think the thing to remember when it comes to politics and elections is that the average person will spend all of like 10 seconds thinking about this. And whatever the thing is, it needs to be able to be summarized quickly in a soundbite, right? So if the soundbite is weed is too powerful and it's causing mental issues in young people, right? even if only 5% of the population buys into that, if they feel strongly about it, it is something that is a tool in the toolkit of election, let's face it, propaganda, right? This is how elections are won or lost, on these little, you know, the edges of marginal issues. So that's how these guys have to think going into an election year, right? And one of the things that gives me pause is when Trump makes these claims, you know, he's testing the waters, right? So you're going to see a lot of this testing the waters. Chuck Schumer putting out this tweet, retracting it, you know, that's obviously he got his hand slapped by somebody telling him that, hey, you can't, you know, say that safe banking is enough. You have to be more equity focused in your messaging, right? So that makes me concerned that when we talk about Florida and Florida getting on the ballot for 2024, I don't know if Ron DeSantis wants to have his state have rec on the ballot, right? And that makes me concerned. Do they put their finger on the scales when it comes to the Florida Supreme Court, right? So that's something that I'm like, I would love to see that get on the ballot. I'll believe it when I see it, right? Because I'm just really concerned that somebody's going to say, hey, let's nix this if we can, because we don't want this to be an election issue that we talk about.
Right, right.
Okay, last point on this before we move on. I think this is a good example. Nancy Mace, you know, coming out as a champion, talking on Twitter about getting rid of 280E, right? Exactly what we need. And some people saying, hey, don't even mention Nancy Mace. Don't talk about her. Don't support her because she has some opinions that I disagree with. Right? That, hey, she's got right-wing opinions. Well, newsflash, she's a Republican, right? And to be a Republican, you know, to pass something in this country, in this country being America, not Canada, but you have to work with people who you don't agree 100% with. And as we move forward into an election year, that's where you're going to see a schism, because people on the left and far left, although they don't like to call themselves that, are going to say, if somebody has some opinion on, you know, X, Y, Z issue that I don't agree with, I don't want to, you know, talk to them or work with them on anything, right? And that is not going to work. So that just shows you where people's heads are at going into an election year. And it's, remember, it's not just the politicians. I'm talking about the underlying voters. The more extreme they are, the more likely they are to say that, hey, I don't even want to talk to anybody who doesn't have all the same opinions I have.
Yeah, and that's kind of, that's been an issue in the States for quite some time though, right? Like
building, just, getting worse though.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, absolutely. It's just kind of like saying, oh, regardless of, I think even in COVID when we had first seen that, like regardless of what this person is saying, because they're a Republican or because they're a Democrat, I'm gonna discount every single thing. Doesn't matter if I agree with whatever. They, you know, they wave this flag and I don't.
Agreed, great point. So look, shifting gears here. What gives me pause on the little bit of action we're seeing on cannabis? Let's take a look at the macro situation now, right? And I think it's a good time for an update on that. So first of all, let me just say that I came into the year very negative, thinking that we were going to go through the windshield, and the exact opposite has happened, right? So I want to make sure we're clear on that, that I've been completely blindsided by how strong it's been in Q1. We have seen phenomenal rebound in equity markets. We've seen a lot of animal spirits come back in terms of people buying houses. We've seen consumer consumption still really strong. We've seen a rebound in tech stocks. And based on the earnings we're seeing, they actually had pretty damn good Q1s across the board. Things that I, you know, bought and then sold, like Meta, way too early. Right? That stock is over doubled from its low, almost tripled, I think, from its low. So I've been very surprised and very wrong on the strength throughout Q1, right? So it kind of leads you to this question of like, hey, is the recession canceled, right? Is the recession over, right? And to people's credit, I mean, inflation is coming down, right? I think it's going to end up being a little stickier than people think. But overall, we are having this slow grinding repricing. You know, we've obviously done a lot of work over the last year in, you know, popping speculative bubbles. But certain areas of the economy, you know, that were more interest rate sensitive have been adjusting over the last year. Other parts have proven to be pretty resilient, right? Like technology, like anything consumer facing, because consumers held up really well. So it makes you think, and it gives credence to people who say, look, maybe the recession, if it is coming, is going to be a mild one. It's not going to be as serious as people think it's going to be. And that would lead credence to where the S&P is at over 4,000.
Yeah, there's, you know, there's a lot to unpack in what you just said. And I kind of disagree with the majority of it.
I love it. Okay, go.
Yeah. So, well, first of all, let's start with this. This is a really weird year, notwithstanding everything that's actually going on, but just let's look at, this is the third year of a presidential election, right? I've heard this stat thrown out many times. Typically, the market does well during the third year of a presidential election when, you know, just because the president has to do whatever they possibly can to get reelected, right?
Sure.
So they pull out all the stops. I don't know if Biden's doing all that stuff, but whatever. That's just one caveat to kind of talk about. Yeah, the market rebound, I definitely agree with. That obviously did happen. We did see that. Housing, like I'm in the housing market right now. We're like, you know, closely watching it and trying to look for a place. And I've seen just houses just go bonkers, right? Like in Toronto, mm-hmm. for example, last week, there was a single detached house that sold for 25% over asking. And they got 14 bids, right? And this is like where, and the price of the house, I think, was like 1.25 is what it sold for, which was pretty insane, right? Given where interest rates sort of are. Obviously, there's tons of reasons for why the housing market didn't collapse. Lack of supply, it's going off low volume, we got a million new immigrants, blah, blah, blah. A lot of things that just didn't equate. Oh, and then the fact that in Canada for variable mortgage rates, the banks allowed longer amortization periods, which, you know, I think is really weird, but hey, nobody could have predicted that, right? So that kind of did happen. So that, I feel like that sort of held housing where it was. Earnings are just kind of going up because, yes, the consumer was never weak, right? I don't think anybody ever thought that the consumer was weak. You and I were constantly sharing data back and forth about, you know, just like small little indicators. Like, you know, I was showing you like Rolex watches that were selling for over
the Rolex index.
Yeah, exactly. And it did come down. Don't get me wrong. They came down like 20-30%, but like, you know, like a Panda Daytona that goes for 25,000 was selling for 55,000 during 2020, 2021. Now they sell for about 40,000. They're still going double over asking, but they've come down a little bit, right? So we are seeing a little bit of weakness, but not as much. The consumer is still strong. I agree with that. So that's why earnings kind of make sense. The other thing that, you know, you got to start looking at is the gold market. The gold market rallied like crazy. We did see some things kind of happen in like gold stocks sort of getting re-rated. But mm-hmm. the one thing, one indicator, just kind of like when you look at real estate, you got to look at capital markets transactions, right? Mm-hmm. Not that many deals have been done this year. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but I'm just trying to visualize the number right now. But it was less than what happened last year, right?
Well, and last year was, you know, definitely a very low year compared to 2020 and 2021. I mean, 2021 was bonkers, right? We had SPACs, we had everything. So, you know, somewhat to be expected. I think your point's a good one. We have very few IPOs last year, right? Very few IPOs this year, right?
And let's not even look at IPOs. Let's look at like follow-ons. Let's look at pipes. Let's look at any financings. Financings have declined or drastically declined across the board.
Fair.
So that still shows that the capital markets are off. Where we are seeing some love is in precious metals. And that's typically a hedge based off of whatever's going on the economy, right? So you're right in all the data points that you pointed to. And I think your overall thesis, I kind of cut you off before you went to your overall thesis, but I was going to say, I don't think we're out of this recession, or I don't think that the recession's canceled, right, by any means. The one thing that I've heard and that I like to say is this is the most talked about recession ever.
Like right.
Every single person knows that we're going to go into a recession soon.
Yes. Right. Yes. That's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. And one last point, we are seeing a lot of layoffs start to come. Right. So there are layoffs that are coming, and that does take a little while for it to trickle into the market. Now, obviously, that's like doom and gloom and bad news. And I don't want to be the bearer. Like, I don't want to be the person who spouts bad news. But, you know, these are things to consider. So I don't know. Like, I don't think the recession is canceled. And I don't think you do either. I know I did cut you off before you went to your thesis.
Yeah, no, listen, I'm want to take a moment and take the other side of the argument, right? And first of all, just acknowledge that, hey, I had this prediction, pretty high conviction, and bet on it, and so far I've been wrong. So I want to kind of point that out, right? I'm trying to look at it from the other side of, okay, what did I miss? And even talking about, you know, the cannabis trade right now and the investment and asking, hey, is the risk reward good? In general, markets are pretty efficient. Like, that's what I really have learned over the last few years, especially public markets. So there has to be a relatively compelling case for why there would be a big mispricing, right? Now, sometimes things change and the data changes and the outlook and sentiment changes, and that gets priced into the stock, right? But that's why I'm kind of getting at, well, with cannabis, okay, the markets aren't reacting. So, you know, what's the case for it being mispriced? Well, to start with that, I'm going back to the S&P. The S&P is over 4,000 right now, right? I'm still betting against it. What are the odds that it's mispriced, right? So I am taking in all the data of saying, look, I'm confused because inflation is coming down, right? Things seem pretty good. The consumer is, despite the fact that mortgage rates are, you know, much higher than they were a year ago, people have acclimated to them and people are bidding relatively aggressively on housing, like we're talking about, right? The Fed looks like it is close to the end of the hiking cycle. This episode will come out on May 3rd, and very likely that's when the Fed will increase by another 25 bips, right? Maybe they'll have another one to follow on, but more or less they're done. Now, there is a long and variable lag effect to the cumulative tightening that they've done, but I think everyone has to be amazed by how quickly they've tightened, right? The fastest ever in history, and the fact that the economy seems pretty good, right? Like, if you had asked anybody a year ago, if you had told them where the Fed funds rate was going to be, people would say, well, there's no way you could move that quickly, right? We're going to be like in a depression if you do that, right? The S&P is going to be down 30%, yeah, but that's exactly not where we are. Mm-hmm. So the point I'm getting to is that, you know, I still am very worried. I still, from the macro perspective, like, cannabis fell off a cliff in December, never really recovered, right? It's kind of, at the best, you can say it's sort of been trying to find a bottom. So
cannabis has its own isolated issues, right? And I know you're probably gonna say you got to look at everything in totality, but like, with cannabis, it's okay. Like, until there's some sort of legalization that sort of occurs, like, we're kind of, you know, we're like, we can, more and more states can keep coming online. Eventually, there's going to be less states that come online. Like, the total addressable market is going to sort of plateau. But as long as 280E is there, as long as it's still federally illegal and you don't have institutional capital like into the sector, there's really not much retail can really do at this point, right? Like, retail has supported the industry up until now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to get to that in a second, right? But just to talk about some of the interesting things that I think we're seeing. So because the macro, like, because the S&P has been pretty strong, right? The fact that cannabis is kind of getting the benefit on the tail end, it's not really signaling a change to me per se, right? Like, if you think about everything that's happened in our world,
what's typically signaling in cannabis?
Like, if the macro was really bad and the S&P was, you know, still kind of in the dumps, right? If it was like, yeah, there was a lot of fear in the market, similar to how there was in Q3 and Q4 of last year, right? And cannabis was rallying in the face of that, I would kind of say, oh, that's kind of more interesting to me, right? For me, I kind of look at it and say, cannabis is when the S&P is over 4,000, a lot of opportunities on the periphery seem interesting, right? Like Bitcoin gets interesting again for people. Like, when the overall market is strong and animal spirits are strong, then people kind of filter to the sidelines and gamble a little bit on the sides. Mm-hmm. Do you get what I'm saying? But when the down the middle, you know, tech stuff is beaten up, and then if cannabis was rallying on this, that would be more exciting to me.
Gotcha.
Right. But on the other hand, what we're seeing, you're seeing ultra volatile bond rates when it comes to, you know, the bond market. Can't decide which direction to go. And there's a lot of talk about what does it actually mean, right? When the SVB banking issue happened, I don't even call it a crisis because it lasted like a week, you know, the bonds fell off a cliff and people interpreted that as a flight to safety. It probably means a recession is starting. So people park their money in safer assets, right? Like government treasuries. But pretty quickly, as that got sorted out, bonds have gone higher. And in the last few weeks, they've really started to jump again, right? So what is that telling you? Is it telling you that, hey, maybe the recession is being delayed or there's lower risk of recession? Maybe it's telling you that people are worried that the Fed has to stay higher for longer, right? And we're not going to get a cut as fast as we thought we were getting. Maybe it's just trepidation around the fact that coming up pretty soon, we've got this debt ceiling issue, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things I forgot to mention was a couple of weeks ago, for the first time in a long time, I actually bought some cannabis stocks.
Wow.
First time. Yeah. First time all year for sure.
Stocks, right? Not products.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Those are separate issues. I mean, sometimes, you know, at times I sell something and buy something, you know, to take advantage of the capital loss, right? To move it around. But this was purely like new money in. And it wasn't related to safe banking, by the way. It was the week that we saw rumors that Mitch McConnell would be stepping down.
Yeah. I do remember you mentioning that. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you remember, you know, obviously he's the grim reaper of cannabis, you know, huge issue for cannabis. Well, he had a fall at a restaurant a couple months ago and has kind of been, you know, MIA since then, right? The guy's like 81, you know, how long is he going to keep doing this? Well, you know, I bought on that news saying, hey, if we get rid of Mitch, even if the person coming in behind him is not super cannabis friendly, whoever's coming in behind him is not going to have the gravitas that he has, right? He's able to keep his party in line. People are scared of Mitch McConnell, but whoever is coming in is not going to have such an easy time corralling their party, right? Remember the House Speaker had to do like, you know, 12 votes or something to get elected. So it's going to be harder for anybody coming in to control their party. But, you know, he basically, Mitch McConnell shrugged off this news and put out a statement saying, no, I'm coming back. And I think part of it, honestly, is around this debt ceiling issue. Like debt ceiling, like forget cannabis, debt ceiling is such a monumental issue for, you know, the entire country. And I'm sure it'll get resolved, but you know, these guys will play games with it until the last minute. And that is going to really upset, you know, businesses and the world's creditors who lend money to the U.S. Last time they had a game of chicken over the debt ceiling, the U.S. actually took a hit from one of the rating agencies on its debt. You know, pretty minor one, but even a minor hit to a country that borrows trillions of dollars means billions of dollars more in interest payments for no reason whatsoever, right? Just because people want to play games. So I think, let me put it this way. If Mitch McConnell leaves, I think it's a huge positive. Will he leave? Will he not leave? Again, that's part of this risk-reward discussion, right? I think there's now some upside baked into this cake. Sorry, I should say potential upside, which is not being baked into the prices. And that kind of makes me, you know, poke my head out from under the sand and say, let's not ignore this. There could be something here, guys.
That is interesting. And I don't know, man. With Mitch McConnell, you just don't know. It's a wild card, right?
You know, before we get back to the cannabis analysis, I just want to talk a little bit about a topic I've seen pop up a lot, which is headlines saying that there is a commercial real estate debt bubble. Okay. And this has kind of been the largest headline, I think, that's come out of the banking crisis, that a lot of regional banks have a lot of commercial real estate debt and that they're going to be in trouble. And so let's parse out what this actually means, right? Because commercial real estate is really broad. I was talking to somebody about this on the weekend, and they figured that commercial real estate referred to, you know, office towers and retail properties, you know, like shopping malls, right? And they said, look, office is in trouble because of work from home. Retail is in trouble because of e-commerce. You know, so there you go. Commercial real estate's in trouble. But I said, look, commercial real estate also includes warehouses, right? Industrial, which, as we've talked about many times, is been on absolute fire especially over the last 2 or 3 years. It also includes multifamily, meaning apartments. So not like, you know, individual houses or condos, but if somebody owns an entire apartment building, that is part of the commercial real estate bucket, right? In the last 3 years, if you break down, you know, these assets, warehousing and multifamily has been incredibly desired. And the values have, you know, doubled or more since COVID. Retail, you know, COVID really put a hamper on retail. So everyone has been careful on retail the last few years. And also people have been more cautious on office. Mm-hmm. So values in those asset classes have stayed pretty flat, whereas the other assets have doubled or more. And the rents have gone up considerably. You know, rents today compared to 3 years ago, you know, for apartments are a lot higher. So what that means is that even if you had some debt on your, you know, in your industrial portfolio or your multifamily portfolio, the rents have gone up considerably. So even if there's an adjustment in yields, the properties are probably okay. There's not a whole lot of distress unless there's some kind of special situation, over leverage, floating rate, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. Where the problems really are, retail is actually, I think, okay, more or less, depending on what it is. I think office is really the trouble child. And, you know, now to go back to cannabis, I'm going to actually make this comparison like I did in 2021 when I said, you know, I said that the earnings for office buildings have never been more uncertain. And I said the earnings for cannabis companies, which were trading at a much lower valuation even back then in 2021, I said cannabis looks a lot more solid, right? And look, I was half right, half wrong. office buildings, you know, I was right to say that it's never been more uncertain. And that wasn't being priced in at the time, right? Cannabis, I was absolutely wrong. Those earnings were a lot more vulnerable than I thought they were, right? And obviously they have absolutely fallen off a cliff in the last 2 years. So I want to put these two asset classes next to each other because although they are very different, I actually think there's some really interesting parallels between investing in cannabis and investing in office. So not just commercial real estate, but office assets specifically. And to draw the parallel, basically, if you look at cannabis and you look at office, even if you have good earnings today, there's very little investor appetite for these assets across both sectors because there's a high uncertainty on the future earnings. So if you have a building where you're getting good rents and you're fully occupied and you have, you know, leases for another couple years, the problem is people say, okay, great, I know you're okay for the next few years, but what happens after that? When these leases expire, people are now being very negative in how they model the renewal of those leases, right? Similarly, if you look at cannabis companies, the companies are telling you, right, Curaleaf and Trulieve, for example, are telling you that we're going to have really good cost control this year. We're going to figure out a way to get our operational cash flow on side this year. But nobody believes them, right? If anybody believed them, then you would probably get some more love in the equity. But that's not what's happening today. People, myself included, are saying, show me, prove to me that you can actually improve on an OCF basis after tax adjustments. And then I will believe you when you're saying all these great things about cost cutting, right? And all these great things about OCF. So even if the results are good today, people are putting a high degree of uncertainty on the future. That's investors and that's also lenders. And I would say in general that people are assuming the worst. And that is what is impairing the value of these assets.
Yeah, I mean, to just add to that or to add a comment to that really quickly on the cannabis side. I mean, like, can you blame investors? Like, no, you know, they haven't proven it out. So it's like, I fully understand from an investment perspective why the market is reacting the way that it is, right? Especially for cannabis companies. And it's not only the cannabis company's fault. It is also the sector in general.
Yeah. I mean, look, the companies are doing what they can, right? Yeah. But at the end of the day, the sector is what it is, right? The prices are going down, tremendous amount of competition, depending on the market. Markets like New York have been an absolute mess, right? So we see that, right? Mm-hmm. People can see that. Now, this is where the discussion gets a little more complex, is what is the intrinsic value of a office building, right? You look at it and you say, okay, this building used to be worth, let's just make up a number, $20 million, okay? Today, the value is, we can guess, between 10 and 15 million, mm-hmm. right? So again, I'm just making that up. So losing between a third to half of the value, let's say, right? But you say, look, the cost to build a building has never been higher. So to rebuild this building today would cost you, you know, $30 or $40 million. So I'm already trading at some fraction of replacement cost. However, if I have vacancy in the building, or if I lose a tenant in the future, the carrying cost of an office building is very high compared to, you know, a warehouse or a piece of land, because office buildings just have to be maintained to a higher degree, right? Through cleaning, security, staff, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So this is the balancing act. How do you measure it? What kind of risk and losses are you willing to take in the short term on the idea that the intrinsic value in supply and demand will catch up in the long term? And this is a conversation we have often in cannabis, right? If these prices have cratered, then that should prevent people from being able to access new capital to build facilities. Clearly, that's happening, right? So doesn't that constrict supply, right? And if you constrict supply, right, and as companies sort of have financial issues and go out of business, doesn't supply decrease? And doesn't that in turn help stabilize the market? And doesn't that increase price over time, right, back to something sustainable? That's the argument about what's happening in California. People aren't renewing their licenses, is what we're being told. Prices are rebounding, is what we're being told. But will that play out to a significant degree? And will that hold over a period of 1, 2, 5 years, right?
I'll let you finish.
Well, the last point on that, so that's the supply side of the story. Both things, office and cannabis, have this interesting kind of asterisk on the demand side of the equation, where with offices, people say, okay, look, businesses have to have some level of office, but how much? Do they need all that office? Can they cut it down by 50%, right? Will some small companies go completely remote, right? That's the asterisk with office space. With cannabis, people say, okay, sure, cannabis is going to be huge. People are consuming cannabis to a large degree, but how much will go to the illicit market? How much will be Delta 8, right? And that is the big question mark when it comes to the demand side of the equation.
For sure. And then one thing for cannabis on the supply side of the equation is, you can't just assume that just because somebody gives up a license that all that product comes offline, right? They could just switch and go to the illicit market. They can start cultivating and just illicitly selling cannabis. Like that does happen too.
Totally. And that is...
So I mean, like, yeah, so that means that the product doesn't necessarily leave the market. Yeah, it leaves the compliant market, but it's still available for a consumer, right? Especially in like... You know, especially in a mature market like California, right? Like, you know, that was one of the biggest things that blew both our minds away, was you could walk into an illicit dispensary, not even know it's an illicit dispensary.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. That's a great point, right? So I guess the point I'm getting at is that there is a high degree of uncertainty. You know, the supply and demand equation and what we just walked through, it sounds pretty good, right? Until you start figuring out that, hey, just because people don't renew their licenses doesn't mean that they're done, right? Maybe means they're done doing it legally, right? And in that uncertainty of supply and demand, you can have the pendulum swing too far, right? Yeah. Like people start assuming, for example, with these leases and office buildings, people start assuming that no one's going to renew, right? Which also probably too far, right? It's you know, obviously some people are going to renew, and if you look at other markets, you know, across Europe and other markets, it does seem office is on the rise in terms of occupancy and renewal. So the point I'm getting to is, I think that you're going to have some very enterprising people in the office space who, at the right price, start saying, look, there's enough ways out of the room here. There's enough exits here, whether it's just, you know, office kind of stabilizing, whether it's the potential for converting some offices to residential, which is not as easy as it looks, but it's definitely possible. And at the right price, it's definitely becomes a compelling business case, which I think office is starting to get to that price. Now, we have not seen a lot of distressed sales in office, and that's a little bit surprising, but not that surprising because people have, you know, fixed in debt, you know, leases run long term. So sometimes even if tenants aren't using the space, they're still paying, right? So you have a little bit of breathing room there. But that being said, in cannabis, which has all the things going against it, we haven't seen much distress, which is amazing, right? I mean, I'm a little mind boggled that we haven't seen, you know, more dilutive equity raises or distressed sales or anything of that nature.
Yeah, I mean, that is something that's actually pretty interesting that you point out. I mean, we have seen, it depends, right? On the top tier, definitely, but on the bottom tier, we have seen companies just delist. So like, they just don't get the capital and they just don't survive, right? For the bottom tier companies. And then if you look at some of these companies in terms of asset sales, like some of these deals are just not going through, right? So I think cannabis is kind of in that weird time where a lot of the deals that were inked up, they were inked up at such high valuations, they're just either going to fall through or get re-rated down. And then that's going to kind of push valuations further down the line. Like, you know, we haven't seen any private, I shouldn't say that. I haven't seen any private cannabis deals sort of get done. I think I've seen two RTOs in the last, or IPOs in the last like 12 months, not 12 months, in the last like 7 months that I can think of. So, I mean, you know, you're right. There haven't been that many dilutive raises, but I just think that's because the capital markets have completely turned off and the companies that are puttering away, they still try to, if there was some sort of M&A to sort of happen, I think the next part of the leg of the business cycle is we should start seeing more roll-ups happen in cannabis before we start seeing more dilutive raises sort of happen, right?
Well, I think it goes to everything that we're talking about, that, you know, going back to this idea of, you know, where the macro is, where the S&P is that, you know, look, greed has taken over again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are very scrappy on the way down. Nobody wants to sell their asset at a discount. Nobody wants to take a huge write down on, you know, a private round of financing. And yeah, people exactly. want to figure it out, right? So just to go back to this conversation about cannabis stocks, you know, is there good risk reward here? Is this time different? I think that, look, you actually have a lot of outs right now, right? I mean, cannabis is pretty beaten into the ground. You know, I would like to, you know, see the macro fall, you know, fall apart more before I get really excited about how low cannabis can go, to be just frank with you. I just don't think there's enough fear out there right now. But here are your outs out of cannabis. Like, here's the catalyst that can really help you. TerrAscend could actually go through with this TSX uplisting, right? They could figure out how to do it. Remember, the TSX hasn't really seen any IPOs. Also, they're losing companies, you know, to the NASDAQ, right? So there's some incentive there for the TSX to do something. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. I have no idea, but that's just one possibility. You could actually see more safe banking chatter, right? And they figure out what equity package to put together, you know, whether it's HOPE, whether it's this Graham Act, whatever it is. You could have this rescheduling event in kind of Q3, Q4 of next year. So I've kind of put it as October of 2024, which is getting closer. I mean, that's under a year and a half now, right? So that's we're kind of slowly marching towards that, right? And then the last one, like, you could just see better cash flow from operations from the MSOs. That in itself is an out, quote unquote, in that you stop worrying about how much are these companies burning every day? Are they going to go broke? Mm-hmm. If they can stabilize that, right? No one's really worried, I think, about GTI going broke because they've proven great cash flow from operations. Mm-hmm. So they're getting a little more love for that, not a whole lot more, but some more love. You know, whereas you look at the smaller names, right, like an Air, and if they can just prove that, hey, we can actually be cash flow break even from ops, that's going to really help their stock price, right? And by the way, I think, Abby, you were pointing this out before we started, some of the smallest names have had the most love in the last 2 weeks. Air, for example, I think is up like 20 or 25% off the bottom. who knows if that will last, but just to show that when it reverses, right, it doesn't necessarily go all to the top, right? The companies at the very bottom sometimes get the biggest pop because they were being priced like they were going to go broke.
Yeah, and that was something that I found really weird. The two names that kind of came across my desk here, across my screen, was Vext and Lowell Farms, and they were up like 27 and 32% respectively, which I was just like, I haven't even looked at those names in forever, right? And they were like the top gainers.
Yeah, I think you got to be a little bit careful with some of those really small names just because.
Oh, for sure.
So like microscopic, you know, like.
Yeah, it was like, you know, we talked about it, and it's probably just coming, it's like a 30% off of, you know, going from. It's just coming off a lower number, right? So it does get a lot
yeah,
higher.
Yeah, I mean, look, for Lowell, going from 4 cents to 6 cents or something, right? I mean, that's
yeah,
right.
Exactly. So, no, that's exactly it. But what I found interesting was that, like, why would anyone buy that when they could just pick up GTI at these valuations, right? So
well, look, again, when things are trading for literal pennies, there is an argument to be made of people saying this thing is trading like it's about to go broke. If I think there's some catalyst or it's not going to go broke. Sometimes the bottom of the barrel gets the most love in a percentage term, right? But again, nothing is risk-free. And if you buy that and, you know, there's that little, and again, it could be really low volume. So you can do it with a couple $1,000s, but not with.
Sorry, I was going to say, actually, the only sound thesis that, and I just thought of this as we were talking right now, is that maybe some people think that these smaller operators, ones that have like decent balance sheets, are prime or compelling M&A candidates, right? So maybe they're doing it. They're taking a position in these smaller names to possibly get taken out by one of the bigger guys. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't think we should think too hard about it. I mean, just for context, like, you know, Lowell traded, I think, like all of 20,000 shares, you know, to go up at, you know, 5 cents a share or something. So that works out to like $1,200 or, you know, like at 6 cents a share, you're like $1,200, right? Like a volume.
Yeah.
So, you know, hard to see. Actually, it's less than that even. But these are really small movements at the end of the day, right? So they can have these really erratic swings. The point is, I think there's enough going on here in the cannabis story in terms of these outs. So cash flow from operations, TSX uplisting, safe banking, rescheduling in October of 2024. You've got enough kind of interesting stuff here that I go, okay. Yeah, like not to say that bet the farm that it's going to happen, but the stuff is trading pretty cheap. It's pretty beat up. The biggest thing that gives me pause, Mitch McConnell also, right? That him stepping down, I think, would just be a really nice tailwind. What gives me pause is just like, to me, the macro just seems like there's a lot of risk on the horizon that's not priced in. And if that gets beaten up and cannabis still sticks around, even if it, you know, if it gets whacked, then I'm kind of like, okay, more fear is priced in, you know, that's the time for me to get a little more excited here. Right. That's what's giving me pause. And let's be clear, still sitting on a tremendous amount of cannabis stocks. Right. But I think bringing it back to my office example, people who take this kind of calculated risk today, who kind of try to quantify their downside and take a stab at some intrinsic value, can be really well rewarded. They can really make a lot of money. As Peter Lynch famously says, you know, it is darkest right before it's completely pitch black, meaning that you could stick your neck out and take a big swing just to be subject to losing it all when it goes pitch black, right? And for the first time, though, in quite some time, I am optimistic about the opportunities for fresh money looking at cannabis. And I think that's saying something.
Yeah, saying a lot, actually.
Okay, Abby, wrapping it up here, any final thoughts?
No, I think, you know, I think this was a really good update, and I think we drew a lot of great parallels. You know, some of these, the macros that we talked about, they're nothing new. We just did a deeper dive, but I think we did a great job on just kind of going through it. What about yourself?
Well, you know, to close it off, everybody, I just want to say, I think it's a good time to be paying attention, a good time to be looking at what's going on. might be worth, you know, thinking about what moves you would want to make, or at least sniffing around. And for me personally, I'm going to keep an eye on what's going on, but I'm really waiting for the macro environment to change. You know, listen, maybe that is giving me more clarity that I am wrong and that this economy is going to hold up and the stock market is not. The stock market is not going to have, you know, an overreaction to the slowing of the economy, right? But I think we need to see more clarity before I'm really ready to put more money out. I'm still more likely to be in, you know, capital raising mode right now, and keeping my powder dry. But you never know. So I have my cannabis portfolio. It's sitting there. It's not doing a whole lot. And let's see what happens over the next few weeks. So love to hear your questions, everybody. CINpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time.
This podcast is a general communication and entertainment being provided for informational purposes only. It is educational in nature and not designed to be a recommendation for any specific investment product, strategy, plan, feature, or other purposes. Any examples used in this podcast are generic, hypothetical, and for entertainment purposes only. None of Cannabis Investing Network or its affiliates are suggesting that the listener or any other person take a specific course of action or any action at all. Communications such as this are not impartial and are provided in connection with advertising and marketing of products and services. Prior to making any investment or financial decisions, an investor should seek individualized advice from a personal financial, legal, tax, and other professional advisor that take into account all of the particular facts and circumstances for an investor's own situation. By listening to this communication, you agree with the intended purpose described earlier. Opinions and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions constitute our judgment and are subject to change without notice. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors.